Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
But I'm the decider.
At the beginning of the campaign season, it seemed unlikely that Tennessee and Virginia Senate seats would even be in play. Recent polls show that they are now up for grabs, and who wins could decide which party controls the United States Senate. Also, North Korea's reported nuclear test is grabbing headlines this week and creating a political tug of war between two candidates who are seen, two senators who are seen as potential presidential candidates. So your chance to talk politics. What's happening in your state? Are there any surprises? Give us a call. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email address is talk@npr.org. And today we're joined by guest political junkie Mara Liasson and NPR's national political correspondent. Mara, it's nice to have you here in Ken Rudin's seat.
Nice to be here. Ken Rudin is my editor. So anything I learned, I learned from him, except for the bad jokes.
Okay. Those you got on your own.
Right.
Before we get to the senatorial debates, a little bit about North Korea. Now, earlier today, President Bush more or less declined to get involved in what's developed into a spat between Hillary Clinton of New York and Senator John McCain of Arizona.
Yes, he very purposely declined. He said, look, my predecessor tried one approach, bilateral talks. It didn't work. I'm trying another one. I think implicit was that's not working either, but he said over and over again, I'm going to stick with it.
Mm-hmm.
That is kind of the only option he feels he has at this time. But it has, look, anything like this coming 4 weeks before Election Day is going to be politicized. And the Democrats have been asking the question, when it comes to the axis of evil, Iraq, Iran, and North Korea, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? I mean, they're essentially asking that question, saying, look what's happened with those three states that President Bush singled out. One is a mess. One is on its way to nuclear weapons, and the other just exploded one.
So, nevertheless, John McCain says, in response only to those criticism from people like Hillary Clinton, that her husband's administration didn't exactly succeed on this either.
That's right. He went even further than that. He said it was all carrots and no sticks, and that's why we're in the mess we are today. Now, the John McCain-Hillary Clinton battle is something that's going to maybe come to a fuller head in 2008. But 2006, the midterms are always a proxy for the next presidential race, and that's what you're seeing here. You have the Republicans and the Democrats trying to take every single issue and turn it to their advantage. The fact is that the Clinton administration did fail with the bilateral approach, and the Bush administration has failed so far with the multilateral approach. But I think you do see over and over again this defense of the Clinton administration in foreign policy and an attack on it by the Republicans. And that is one of the sub-themes. And you're going to see it, I think, in much fuller force in a couple of years.
Well, let's get now to the Senate races that we wanted to talk about. You were at the debate in Virginia between the Senator incumbent Republican George Allen and Democratic challenger Jim Webb, a former Republican. Did Tuesday's debate change any minds in Virginia?
I don't know if it changed any minds. This is a very, very interesting race. This race was never expected to be one of the toss-ups, but it is now. George Allen was someone who was already eyeing a bid for the White House. He was considered to be almost a shoo-in for re-election. And then he basically proceeded to inflict a series of self-inflicted wounds on himself. There's the famous Makaka incident, which everyone in the universe knows about by now. Then there were allegations that he used a racial slur about African-Americans regularly when he was in a college football player.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting question about this race now is, what will Jim Webb do to take advantage of this? He's been almost an innocent bystander in this race. George Allen has sunk in the polls because of his own missteps. Now Allen is making a very concerted effort to put those issues, to get beyond them, to get beyond the character issues. He took out an unprecedented 2 minutes of television time to ask that voters look at issues instead of character.
Especially not mine.
Especially not his. Right. And but this week, the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, which has been, I think, quite reluctant to put a huge investment in Virginia, because even though the polls were closing, I don't know if they were quite sure this was the best place to put your money. George Allen is a popular politician, has a big war chest. Jim Webb has never run for office before, and he is, it shows. I mean, he is someone who's rather awkward on the stump. He doesn't like dialing for dollars, which is a big part of a politician's job. He can come off as a little abstract and conceptual. But they are now running an ad about George Allen's scandals, slurs, and insults as the text says.
And when you say dialing for dollars, that's not a reference to his distaste for late afternoon movies. It's calling up contributors and asking for money, which is that's the name of the game, particularly a month before Election Day. Let's go to Tennessee. And Republican Bob Corker and Democrat Harold Ford Jr. are vying to succeed Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, who is retiring. And joining us now to talk about that race is Ed Cromer, editor of the Tennessee Journal. He's with us from his office in Nashville, Tennessee. Nice to have you on the program today.
Nice to be here.
Mr. Corker is the former mayor of Chattanooga. Of course, Harold Ford Jr. is a Democrat who represents a congressional district in Congress. They debated each other last night. Toward the end of the evening, we want to listen to a little piece of tape here. Things got a little testy. Let's listen to it.
I'm really disappointed that Congressman Ford continues to talk about my college roommate, somebody that runs a retail operation that has nothing whatsoever to do with the price of oil. And I'd like for you, and I wasn't going to bring this up, when you went on the Financial Services Committee, the one that Fannie Mae comes in front of, why was it that within 60 days, your dad became the registered lobbyist for Fannie Mae to lobby you in Washington on that committee?
Attacking my father has no place in this campaign, Mr. Corker. You came to Memphis and called my family a political machine. I wonder if you feel the same about the Bush family. My dad nor any member of my family has ever lobbied me, nor would I allow them to. I work for the people of the 9th District of Tennessee. And if elected to the Senate, Jimmy Haslam and all the other big oil guys in this state, they'll have to stand in line behind everybody else to come to this United States Senate office.
Well, Ed Cromer, who was Mr. Corker's roommate and why is this an issue?
Well, his roommate was Jimmy Haslam, who's the CEO of Pilot Corporation, which is a large gasoline retailer. Owns they operate self-service stations, truck stops all over the state and all over the region. And Congressman Ford has used this connection. Jimmy Haslam is Corker's finance chairman.
Ah,
he's used this connection to say that Corker will be beholden to big oil.
So, and of course, Harold Ford Jr.'s father was also a member of Congress. Is his family a liability in any way?
Well, yeah, potentially. In fact, people thought that his family would be a great liability, but so far it hasn't proven out. This is really the first real strong attempt by Bob Corker or his campaign to tie Congressman Ford to his family, or to bring it up in this case.
Mm-hmm. And does that indicate that they think they need new traction?
Well, the race is very tight. I think they need any traction they can get. Hmm. The Ford family has been very controversial, but most recently because the congressman's uncle, John, who had been a state senator, was indicted for bribery and threatening a witness. And he has an aunt who was in the state Senate who lost her seat because the Senate voided the election after all sorts of fraudulent activities were discovered at a polling precinct, including people voting in the names of dead persons and that sort of thing.
Oh, that happens in Tennessee, too.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
So And the voters are very aware of this, but they have not so far blamed any of this on Harold Ford Jr. or connected him with it. He's been a separate entity, and you know, respected and not connected with any of that at all.
Let's get a caller on the line. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Justin is with us from Memphis, Tennessee.
Hi, good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I was just calling to mention that it seems to me like Mr. Corker and Congressman Ford are actually very similar in a lot of ways. The way they're going to vote is going to be conservative, it seems to me. Over the past 4 or 5 years, Congressman Ford has stopped being sort of a liberal person representing his majority-minority district. But instead, he's sort of been voting towards the right. He voted to ban flag burning, change the Constitution, voted to ban gay marriage, has changed the Constitution. So to me, I'm going to vote for Harold Ford Jr. only because I want the Senate to tip to the Democrats. To me, it seems like he may be more conservative in some ways than Bob Corker.
Ed Cromer, what do you think?
Well, there's a little something to that, more than a little. Congressman Ford has never been what you would call a flaming liberal, but in the last 2 or 3 years, he has tilted further to the right. You know, his opponent says that's because he was getting ready to run for the Senate. He says he's just matured and changed his views on some things, but for whatever reason, he has become more conservative.
Hmm. Justin, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate
it. Thank you, sir. Have a good day.
And, of course, as Justin referred to, Mr. Ford is an African-American and, if elected, would be the first black senator from the South since Reconstruction days. And is that a factor in this race, Ed Cromer?
Race really hasn't played into it, into the campaign, at least not in a direct, overt way. But I think it will help him more than hurt him that he's an African American, because it has energized the black voters in the state, and I think we're going to see a huge black turnout November 7th.
And at this point, any clear winners emerging from last night's debate?
I think last night it was close to a draw. They were both on their A game, looked sharp, somewhat in contrast to the first debate Saturday night, in which Congressman Ford just seemed, I don't know, just not quite ready for the debate or something. He came in talking 90 miles an hour, looking in all directions, trying to make 7 points at the same time. It was almost as if he thought he was on crossfire instead of a Senate debate. But last night, the contrast was amazing. He was very sharp, on message, made his points, and stylistically was probably better than Mayor Corker. But I think all in all, it was probably close to a draw.
A draw in an election that seems to be a dead heat.
It depends on what poll you look at, but does seem to be very, very close. There've been more polls indicating that Ford is ahead than Corker, but it's all fluid and seems very tight.
Ed Cromer, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Ed Cromer, editor of the Tennessee Journal. He joined us today from his office in Nashville, Tennessee. You're listening to The Political Junkie on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Victoria. Victoria is calling us from Maine.
Hi.
Hi.
You know, all of these races are really interesting that are close, but I want to just call to everyone's attention that there are other races going on in the country that don't seem to get any publicity on any of the major channels. And I'm talking about the race in Maine between Jean Hay Bright and Olympia Snow. You know, our state is kind of small with the voting, and if a lot of money or just a lot more publicity could really turn things either way. Ms. Bright has not been able to really get her message out because the Democratic Party hasn't been funding her, because they consider the race not close enough to spend their money on the race. So they've been dumping all of their money into these other close races.
Well, Mara Liasson, Northeastern Republicans were thought to be a vanishing species.
Well, Northeastern Republicans might be a much dwindled species after this election. I mean, some of the most endangered Republicans this year, Link Chafee in Rhode Island, Senator. They're the three Connecticut House Republicans, Chris Shays, Nancy Johnson, and Rob Simmons. They are quite endangered. I just think that in an election year where, believe it or not, both parties do have finite resources, they're going to choose where to spend their money. And Olympia Snow has a safe seat, and they're just not going to pour dollars into that race when they have so many other ones. Look, 7 out of the 8 competitive races right now, Democrats are either tied or ahead. That is extraordinary. And only in one of these races, New Jersey, do they have a chance of actually losing a seat. So I think the Democrats are doing everything they can to see if they can pick up as many seats as they can, possibly even the net 6 they need to take control of the Senate. And I'm sorry to say this, but it's just the way the world works. They're not going to pay attention to other races.
But Victoria, you think the race might have been closer if they'd invested more?
Well, every challenger thinks that, but...
I'm sorry, Victoria, I thought, was away, and then just as I hung up on her, she came back. I apologize for that, Victoria. I did want to give you the chance of a comeback. As you're looking at it, Mara, though, those 7 or 8 races that are competitive, to get control of the United States Senate, the Democrats have to win all or very much,
yes,
almost
it's a
all.
Very high hurdle. And as a matter of fact, I don't think, I think that it's still a higher hurdle than taking control of the House. But the Democrats feel like they're in pretty good shape today. It's interesting that the Republican National Committee is going to spend $30 million in three states, Tennessee, Missouri, and Ohio. And that is pretty much all about the Senate. It's all about preserving the Senate majority and keeping the losses in the Senate. And I think Republicans fully expect to lose seats to a minimum.
Mm-hmm. In the House of Representatives at this point, the Democrats need 15 seats there to get control. And a month ago, you would have said falling a little short. What about now?
A month ago, I would have said that today it looks like a smaller hurdle than it did a month ago. We see these polls that show that the generic ballot, which is basically the question, if the election were held today, would you vote for the Democrat or the Republican? The Democrats are ahead by about an average of 15 points. That's pretty high for them, and I think it's the highest that they've ever had in about a decade. But and about 35 seats are actually considered competitive, and that at least is a slightly bigger pool for them to fish for the 15 that they need.
Mara Liasson, thanks very much for being with us today. And, well, I don't know if it's a good thing or not, but Ken Rudin comes back next week on the Political Junkie segment. Mara Liasson, NPR's national political correspondent. Just before we go, we've received news that a small plane has crashed into a building in New York City. We'll bring you more on that story as it develops. Again, stay tuned to NPR News for more on that story as it develops. I'm Neil Conan. This is NPR News in Washington. I want to grow up to be a politician.